Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Disruptive Business, celebrating those who change the game.
Disruptive Business features cutting-edge organizations and the innovative leaders who guide them. Today's show is brought to you by Minerva Planning Group.
Good morning, Dana. How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
I can't complain. It's nice to see that we finally got winter with Christmas just a scant few days away.
You might think it's nice. I don't think it's
so
nice.
You look as if you're dressed for it. I mean, it's...
I bundled up. I was not kidding around. You should have seen me when I walked the dog this morning. I looked like I was in Alaska.
The dog was like, who is this?
Right. What are we doing? Yeah. And what's going on here? Meanwhile, I don't think we said who we are. So I'm Dana Barrett.
And I am Micah Porter.
And who have we got here today?
Well, today we have got Jeff Hillemeyer with Engage. Engage is a full-service marketing agency for the digital and social age. How did I do with that, Jeff?
You nailed it. That was great.
Well, thank you. And we've also got Noah McNeely from Slingshot. And Slingshot does product development and assists firms in sourcing manufacturing as well.
That's right.
And we're going to sort of talk to each one individually, but when these guys came in the studio, it seemed like they were already best friends, didn't it?
Well, they had an engaging 5-minute conversation outside the studio, so.
And they promised to yuck it up on the show today.
Absolutely.
So if they can do as promised.
All right. Well, Jeff, why don't we start with you and tell us just a little bit about Engage.
Sure. Yeah. So Engage is it's an advertising and digital marketing agency. And it's kind of a mouthful. I'll give you some examples. So we work with Coca-Cola and social media. We do a lot of Facebook and Twitter campaigns for them. For Nationwide, the NASCAR series, we do all the TV and print and everything for that. So as an agency, we have a wide range, which is kind of unique in the space.
Okay. And you actually come from a background. You launched a web design firm while you were still in college. Is that correct?
That's right. Way back in '98. Yeah.
When HTML was all the rage.
Oh, HTML was huge. That was when I used to be actually valuable to the company when I could program in HTML.
Is HTML gone? What happened?
No. There's HTML5, which is actually making a huge comeback. It's kind of the way you program now so that websites can be seen on mobile devices just as easily as on a website.
Okay, good to know. I used to be a programmer too, so I could do all that stuff, but not anymore.
What was your favorite language?
Well, I did the HTML stuff, and I did like ASP.NET and VB and all that stuff, like old school, you know.
Right on.
But I gave it up. It's like a bad habit. I gave it up many years ago.
When I started, there were literally still punch cards.
That's just embarrassing.
Well, now, coming from a background as a web design firm, I guess my first question was, how did you successfully differentiate yourself when you did web design? Because it seems like web design is something that so many people hang a shingle out for, and it would be really difficult to differentiate yourself.
Yeah, so when I started the company, I was in my last year of college. And I say that to point out, I didn't even know the word differentiation until about year three.
Okay.
So it was just a lot of passion and rolling up the sleeves and over-delivering and just out-hustling, I think is how we did it early on.
You just worked harder than other people.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe harder, maybe a little bit better. But where we ended up differentiating and really starting to see growth was around the user experience.
Okay.
So we really kind of started to focus in on this idea that no matter how technical or creative you are building websites, if you are not building it for the user, you know, and specifically for their needs, and it's not going to be successful. And so that's where we focused and really hit our stride.
You knew you could code what you needed to code, but being able to design that upfront experience was really...
Yeah, and surprisingly, it was a big miss by a lot of the web design shops. They would just start building things and not really think about who's going to end up using it. So it was a new area at the time. This was probably 2003.
Okay.
That was our focus.
And you were acquired in 2007. Is that correct?
At the beginning of 2008.
So people still had money at that point to do acquisitions.
So here's the thing. So it's really interesting. We sold in March of 2008. And then a few months later, the kind of world collapsed, and I'll never forget. There was an agency, so we were about 75 people when we sold to Engage in the beginning of 2008, and there was an agency that was our size on the West Coast, and actually a little bit better than us. They didn't start looking to sell until later in 2008, and they were trying to sell for a fourth of what we did like 6 months earlier. So that's how bad it got from when we sold to
So your timing that year. Was really impeccable.
Lucky. I mean, super, super lucky. But yeah, so we were fortunate.
Well, as you grew the web design company, did you expand into other areas as far as marketing goes?
Yeah, before we sold, we certainly did. We started doing more. We started to get into social media at the time,
okay.
And then a little bit of online advertising. But the core at that time was always design and development. And the company that bought us really did something unique. They bought three different companies about the same size and mashed them together. So we were the digital side. Then there was an advertising side and a direct marketing side. That's what, you know, I was excited to talk to you guys today about disruption, because that's never been done before. It's always been acquisitions where you have a large advertising agency that buys up digital shops and tries to be digital.
Right.
Or today you have massive digital shops that do great web stuff, but they try to do advertising and it doesn't work. And so we were crammed together at the same time and forced to figure it out. And almost 5 years later, I think we figured it out.
You know, I have a question about the whole social media thing, because I mean, obviously there's a lot of people specializing in it now and sort of doing work and convincing companies to spend good money on getting out there in social media. And I think everybody feels like you have to, you know, it's kind of like you have a dog, you have to have a fenced in backyard. Well, you know, you have a company, you have to have social media, right? I mean, it's like a have to. But at the same time, I wonder, and maybe you can answer this, how much, what's the percentage of social media followers that actually become customers? And how much of it is just fun and goofy? You know, like with Kraft has, you know, cheese, and they have a Facebook page. Like, does that really make people buy more Kraft cheese? Or is it just like, I want to win a contest?
Yeah, no, that's an awesome point. And Kraft is one of those companies that everybody's a customer. And so, you know, really, they should have 30 million people on Facebook. You know, what happens often is these companies will build up their social media platforms in order to augment or reduce the cost of traditional media. So whereas if you're launching a product, so here's an example. We do all the social media for Chick-fil-A, and we've got the Facebook page up to about 6.5 million people. When they launched the spicy chicken sandwich, have you guys had it? Spicy chicken?
It's
spicy
been a
chicken?
Bit.
Have you tried it?
But yes, I have.
Okay.
It's spicy.
Yeah, Dana, have you
and
tried
it? And it's chicken. No, I have not. I have not actually tried it. I'm sorry.
You got to try it. So they, yeah, it is chicken and spicy. We convinced them to launch that almost exclusively in social media. So rather than doing TV commercials and changing their billboards, they had built up a robust following in social media. And we actually did a really unique thing. We had people sign up and make a reservation to go into their local Chick-fil-A to try the new sandwich. We had 1.5 million people make a reservation to go into a fast food restaurant to try a sandwich. So that's how social media can, you know, be impactful.
And now, did 1.5 million people show up at their appointed time at the Chick-fil-A stores?
It was incredibly high turnout.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a free sandwich. So
free is good.
You got the free sandwich. But you
still
know, what they also do is build a database now. You know,
right.
Most fast food restaurants don't know who their customers are. So now
right.
They've got 1.5 million people that they can reach out to again. So you can use the platforms in many ways. A lot of brands will just throw coupons up there and try to use it for that, and that's usually not the best way to engage people.
Well, when you look at social media, are there some industries which are more and I'm talking B2C here, but still, even among B2C, are there some industries that are more apt to benefit from social media than others? And where I'm coming from with that question is, I do wealth management. People say, you should be on Facebook. And I'm thinking, no one says my advisor Facebook me, you know,
right.
Let me talk about this.
Right.
And just, you know, there's
right.
Some things where it doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Well, I think there's different channels. So LinkedIn, it would still be, even though it's a big B2B space, for somebody in wealth management, I actually think it would probably be a good place. And you would use it differently. You would use it for thought leadership.
Right.
So there's a lot of question areas within LinkedIn. So you might go in and start answering questions. And what that does, it allows you to build your brand
right.
Through social channels. I think the real power of social comes in with advocacy. So you want to build customers that are passionate, and they're going to come to your defense, or they're going to recommend your product. And that's so much more powerful than any TV commercial you'll ever see. Having one friend say, you got to try the spicy chicken sandwich that I know you guys will try now. Or you got to buy this car, or you got to go on this trip. That's so much more impactful than anything you're going to see in print or on TV.
Because it's a real person, and we're so inundated with marketing these days.
Okay. What I tell my clients that are kind of resistant, I explain to them that, you know, there's no one you trust more than your friend telling you to try something. And there's no one you trust less than the company trying to sell you that, telling you how great it is. So if you can move that needle to a little bit more on the side of people referring and friends, it's much more beneficial.
Okay. All right. Well, having moved from your old firm to Engage and now being a full-service marketing firm, and you're essentially running much of the show over there at this point, how difficult was it to move from something that was a bit more narrowly focused to this broad agency that provides, you know, full-service marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the harder thing is not having full and total control. That's,
right.
That's maybe the harder thing. So I think, you know, I think it's been a great education for me because I hadn't done anything outside of digital before. So I've gotten to go on TV shoots. I've gotten to see the other side of things. And it's been exciting because I've got experts around me that are great at these things. And so helping them pull it together and now when a client comes to us with a challenge or an opportunity, we are able to look across the landscape of media and really decide, you know, is the best way to reach people through commercials? Is it through social or is it through something else? And so we can be unbiased against that and really come up with the best recommendations for clients. And I'm seeing it in action and it's fantastic.
Okay. All right. And in addition to being extremely busy on a professional basis, you've got 4 kids at home.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You were just picked for Leadership Atlanta. How are you juggling all of those things?
You know, that's a great question. There's nothing more fun than coming home and seeing the kids and everything. So they're 8, 6, 3, and 2.
And you adopted a child from China.
Yeah, the 2-year-old we adopted.
Right.
That's the easy part, coming home and hanging out with them and stuff. So. Yeah, you know, Leadership Atlanta is fantastic. I don't know if you've had people on that have talked about the program before.
Not specifically Leadership Atlanta on this show. On other shows, yes, but not.
Yeah, it's changed my life, and I'm about halfway through it. But it's just phenomenal. It's the longest running leadership program in the country, and they choose 80 people each year in Atlanta, and it's very diverse. And you are exposed to things you've never been exposed to before. And for me, it's just been life changing.
How much of your time does it take? What sort of commitment do they look for?
It's a pretty big commitment. It's for about 9 months. There's a once a month all day event you have to go to, and then you have a study group you get with once a month as well for 3 hours at night, and then you have a project team you work on that you meet with about once a month. Out of all those things, you can only miss you cannot miss 3 things the whole program. So it's pretty intense. You have to be involved, but it's been easy to make the time for because it's just phenomenal.
And you say it's life changing. What about it's been so impactful for you?
well, and I don't want to take us down a different type of rabbit hole than kind of business disruption. But
sure.
I'll just say that learning about the state of race today, and being me, a white male, I am blown away by the things that I am now learning and seeing that are happening just in society and institutionalized. And then, you know, so you spend a day talking about race, you spend a day talking about criminal justice, you spend a day talking about education, mostly focused on Atlanta. And so I'm just, my eyes are opened to things I never knew were problems that I feel compelled to help fix.
I think in certain ways, it's easy to float above all that in your day to day. You just don't know what's out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. The example I give to friends as I talk to them about it is like if a hotel in town or a restaurant in town was not allowing minorities to go eat there, we would all be standing out picketing and it'd be this terrible thing.
Sure.
But when there's this invisible kind of inequality that happens that we don't really see, you don't know that it's there, and it's easy to not know it's there, and so you can't get involved and you don't know what to do. And so it's just, the main thing for me is it's just opened my eyes, and I've met incredible, incredible people through the process, so I'm thrilled that I decided to do it.
What do folks typically do after Leadership Atlanta to carry on the impetus that it's given?
Yeah, and I don't know for sure exactly what that process is like. The question that me and all my classmates have right now is, well, okay, what can we do to fix these things? And the leadership at Leadership Atlanta tells us just wait until the program's over. Just your whole purpose here is to observe and to understand. So I don't really know the answer to that. There's a lot of nonprofit help and things that are happening that are coming out of Leadership Atlanta. But I'm looking forward to finishing the program and starting to make a difference.
Well, excellent.
How long is the program?
I think it's 9 or 10 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it goes through April of next year.
Now, how does the selection work? How'd they find you?
I was recommended by a couple of people to be in the program this year, and I'd heard about it before and knew that I wanted to be a part of it if I could. And it's, you know, they try to make sure it's a very diverse group of people in all aspects. That's been awesome because I've really gotten to meet some interesting folks. I mean, there's CEOs of companies. There's people who are attorneys for underprivileged. It's just kind of a wide range of people. And, yeah, it's been fantastic.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Yeah.
I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah. Well, getting back to Engage, who's your ideal client?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the ideal client for us is it's one of two things. It's either I'll call it a mid-sized brand that wants an agency to help them with all of their marketing. Mm. So Honey Baked Ham is a client of ours, and we do all the marketing for Honey Baked Ham. That allows us to kind of flex the entirety of our organization to help a client. So that would be one area. And the second type of client would be a company that – is comfortable challenging the status quo and kind of breaking conventions in marketing, mostly in the innovation space.
Okay.
You know, and so like a Chick-fil-A, you know, as conservative as they are, is awesome at trying new things and looking at new ways to reach their customers. And so we're working on some really interesting mobile things with them right now. And to have that mentality internally makes a massive difference.
Were you involved in their response, you know, the brouhaha with the same-sex marriage and that sort of thing? Was your agency involved in helping them respond to the controversy?
Yeah, I mean, we run their Facebook and Twitter accounts, so we were in the muck of it and still are very much. That's been a tough situation.
Someone was working long hours at your agency.
Oh, yeah, 24 hours, full stop, all that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's the type of thing, crisis management is what we call that. Yeah, we do a lot of that, but Chick-fil-A certainly has been the biggest one we've done.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. That could be a whole show, just talking about that and how you handle it.
What to do.
Fascinating, and the different conversations that go on internally about, you know, what we recommend, what they're comfortable doing, you know, but there's no script for this. There's never been anything like this in social media. I mean, it kind of polarized the nation. You had celebrities taking pictures of themselves in a Chick-fil-A saying, I still love Chick-fil-A, and every, you know, politicians getting involved, mayors of cities getting involved. I mean, it was crazy.
Huge.
And quite ugly. I mean,
it was divisive.
It was incredibly divisive. So I really don't think there's been something at that level that we've seen before. I mean, we'd post up a picture of the new shake on the Facebook page, and I'm not kidding you, in 5 minutes, there'd be 10,000 comments of people talking about same-sex marriage.
Yeah. I don't want that shake.
Yeah.
Or I want that
or
shake.
Or I really want that shake.
Right.
Let's shake it up.
Has anyone tried the spicy chicken sandwich?
That's right. Right. By the way. I want to shift gears before we let you off the hook altogether, because I just have a question. When you think about – you talk about your ideal client, and you mentioned a couple of brand names that we've all heard of. Mm-hmm. Can a new brand, like let's say Micah wanted to take his brand and have it become, you know, globally known – is that possible anymore? I mean, what is it? Is it possible for a small shop, you know, a couple of guys or whatever, to have a great idea and to utilize social media and, you know, and become world famous?
Yeah, it's funny. I think what's been fascinating about the last 3 or 4 years in terms of the evolution of technology is the extent at which everything becomes equal. So you can have, if somebody makes a better product or offers a better service, it doesn't really matter who you are or where you are for you to be successful. Kickstarter is a great example. If you guys are familiar, Kickstarter is a great site where you can essentially, you know, you can put a product up there and say, look, it's going to take me $500,000 to make this product and distribute it, and I'll let you buy, you know, you can buy one of these for $40, and if I hit my 500, I'm going to make this. And so what ends up happening is it's no longer the people with the money that make all the decisions of the big companies. It's anybody can now create products or create services, and if it's good, people will talk about it. It goes back to that advocacy. You know, you see things spread like wildfire. The reason Pinterest became the fastest growing website of all time was not because they had some great marketing play. It was because people started using it, loved it, and told everyone, and boom, it just takes off. So it is an incredible equalizer in terms of allowing anybody to be successful today.
And in that particular instance of having a much better product or service that's going to take off, really marketing them begins to play a role of helping guide a series of rapid fire decisions to best communicate, you know, this is the real value of what we bring. This is the reason that we're better. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I go back to, I think you want to encourage and arm your customers with that language so
right.
that they, when they're talking to their friends at cocktail hour, they're talking about you in the way that you want them to talk about your product and service. But, you know, at the end of the day, if they're getting value out of it, they're probably going to tell people. And so you want to enable them to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Jeff, thanks so much. That's you've got a lot of interesting things going on, without a doubt.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. That was fun.
Yeah, and and our other guest is so patiently waiting.
He is. He is just...
Noah's just chilling out, comfortable, relaxed back over there. Time to get in the hot seat, sir.
Well, the drinks helped.
Some people think it's a little early, but we don't think so.
That's right.
Well, you know, good Bloody Mary early in the morning. Nothing wrong with that.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Noah, thanks for being with us. So you are the CEO at Slingshot.
That's right.
Slingshot is a product development group and also assists clients in sourcing manufacturing.
Yeah, I mean, what we do, I like to say that we help our clients build new product businesses.
Okay.
So we're, you know, we do all the engineering, all the design, all the stuff you'd expect a product development company to do, but we also do a lot of science research.
Right.
And we do help clients get all the way through to the point where they have a warehouse full of product and they're shipping those to their end customers.
Okay.
So some clients we work with at a blank sheet of paper stage.
Right.
All the way through design, engineering, science, prototyping, pilot production, and full-scale manufacturing. You know, other clients, you know, like Black & Decker, they may call us up and say, hey, we just want some help in this one area. And,
right.
and that's fine, too.
Okay. Well, one of the things that struck me, and I'm not that familiar with companies that do product development for other companies, but one of the things that struck me is you hear a lot in this day and age about R&D and how R&D helps separate companies from their competitions. 3M used to be the sort of model for that. You know, when a company elects to work with a firm like Slingshot, are they outsourcing something that's sort of a core competency that they have, or how does that integration between what you do and the company work?
Well, it depends on the client. You know, some companies, they are very close to the vest. They hold things very close to the vest with their core product lines. Like Black & Decker doesn't call us to design drills
right.
or develop drills. That's what they do really well.
Okay.
And they're not going to take that off their plate.
Right.
However, a lot of times companies are trying to do something a little bit new, a little bit different. They're trying to get into a different space. They're trying to capitalize on a market opportunity or a new technology that's come up through their R&D process.
Right.
And they don't want to distract their internal resources with that. Those internal resources are focused on, you know, keep making more drills, make them better,
right.
be the best drill in the market. Meanwhile, we'll let someone on the outside work on this, get it to the point where we're ready to take it inside.
Okay.
So we work in ways like that. You know, sometimes we work with new technology companies. So they've come out of universities or they've come out of, you know, some guy had a great idea, built a company around it. So they don't have an internal resource. They don't have an engineering team. They don't have an R&D center, and we become that for them.
Okay. And have you run across situations similar to that which Jeff described where someone brings a product to you and you go, man, this is going to be great. We're going to refine it, and we know it's going to take off.
Well, we've run across that and the opposite. You know, unfortunately,
right.
You know, we do have some that we feel very confident in. We meet people, you know, pretty much every month. Companies and people, they've got something fantastic. You know, we've worked in – and usually a fantastic potential is a product idea or a technology that addresses a problem.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of times there's kind of solutions out there and there's no problem. So it's, you know, technology waiting for a problem. Those aren't good products. It's where you've got a problem, and now you've got a solution, and we can do a lot with that. We can make a great product out of that. We can make a great product launch out of that. Last year, we did a program around, this is kind of disgusting, but bed bugs.
Okay.
You know, bed bugs.
That's a problem.
They became a big deal in the last few years. You know, the pesticides they used to use on them don't work anymore, and they've been banned and whatever. So now people travel, they get bed bugs in hotel rooms. And
right.
We worked with a client that has a technology that helps do early detection for those for bed bugs. So hotels know they can head off a problem before they have one.
Right.
So that was one of those where we knew right out the bat this is going to be huge.
Right.
That was huge. Yeah, it
right?
was.
The hotels all bought it.
Well, it's entering the market in the last few months, it's going well.
All right, not to totally get off the subject, but are bed bugs still a huge problem? Because I know it was like in the news like for a couple months, but it's still out there.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
You'd hear more about the problems that hotels have if it wasn't for firms like Jeff's.
That's right.
Who are manning the Twitter and Facebook and saying, no, that wasn't a bed bug, it was a mosquito.
It
did not have West Nile.
Yeah, it's an international problem. Pretty much every country you travel to in the United States, you know, there's
But it's really just kind of gross, right? Like, it's not actually – can you get, like, really sick from that, or is it just gross?
I'm not a scientist. I mean, I wouldn't want to be bitten by a bed bug that bit somebody else.
Yeah.
All right.
So
just checking.
It's gross enough.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. I was just curious. I didn't mean to get off on a tangent. Sorry.
Yeah, but
that's just what I do.
Yeah, sometimes we have people that come in the door, and even companies, even big companies, they come in, they've got this great thing, and – you know, we realize it's not going anywhere. Either there's something like it out there, or they've got to capture 100% of the market even to break even, you know, just to break even on the program. And sometimes we have to not work with those companies.
So you'll actually check out the business case of someone that's bringing a product to you before you take them on board.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, we want to build product businesses.
Right.
I don't want to have a whole bunch of stories of, oh, yeah, they developed this great product and then we couldn't sell it. You know, that doesn't do me any good. That doesn't do anybody any good.
Right.
What I like to have is stories where the product succeeded and we have a great story, then they hire us for the next project.
Sure. Well, now going back to the bed bug product that you developed, was that a big firm? Was that a small firm? Because I know you work with firms of varying sizes.
It's a very large company.
Okay.
It's a multi-billion dollar company most people have not heard of. They're in the chemical space.
Okay. All right. Well, I know not only do you work with companies of different sizes, but you work with a multitude of industries.
That's right.
Any favorites?
Well, you know, we've got 30 people on staff, so we all have our different preferences. Me personally, I really like consumer products because I like to connect with the consumer. You know, I can become a gardener for a week if I'm doing garden tools, and I can get really deep into that. So I love doing that. But you ask around my company, and there'll be people that love medical devices, I really love doing stuff for police and firefighters. So it just sort of depends. I mean, we really like products and challenges where there is an innovation challenge. I mean, if you come to us and say, hey, I just want you to make my widget a new color for next year, we can do that. Not real exciting. If somebody comes to me and says, hey, I've got this widget next year, I want it to do something widgets have never done before. That I get real excited about.
Right, right, okay.
So what kind of background, like what's your background and what kind of background are the people that work for you? Are they all engineers? Are they all designers? Like, well, how does that work? Explain that.
We found that to really innovate, we have to have a fairly diverse team.
Okay.
Even individuals are diverse. I'm degreed in both engineering and design. So I kind of, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I kind of, now I do this, but so I do art and math, if you will, if you boil it down. But no, we look for people that are in the same situation. They're kind of people that were never satisfied with the job description of their profession. So I look for engineers that you know, they've taken some art classes, or they, you know, they have hobbies building hot rods or things like that. I look for artistic people, designers that understand technical things. I look for scientists, and this is the hardest one, scientists who understand business really well. And actually, our head scientist, he's a fantastic business guy. He's actually one of our best sales guys. You think scientists, they like to stay in the lab, but this guy is the opposite. And that's the kind of people we seek, is people that, you know, job descriptions are kind of meaningless to them. They do their job and they do it well, but at the same time, they can kind of argue with other people about other aspects of the business. And we find that to be very, very productive.
If I'm a headhunter, the description that you've just given me of what you're looking for would send me running.
That's right.
How do you find your folks? How do you find your best employees?
Sometimes they find us.
Okay.
I mean, we certainly we do a lot of networking, and there are a number of organizations that we work through. But it's a relatively small community, product development. But there's people out there that are good designers, good engineers, et cetera. We can kind of find those people, but sometimes the most unique people find us, like the science gentleman I told you about. He found us.
Okay.
And it's like, hey, this is a good fit. Let's build a science R&D part of our business. I've got a guy that works with us that's his previous business, he custom made hot rods and parts for hot rods, and he got interested in what we do, and now he's one of our best thinkers and best fabricators. So
and talking about hot rods, you've just opened up a satellite in Michigan, is that correct?
That's right. We've just started a small office up in the Grand Rapids area that's going to help us serve the Midwest. We've had clients in that area for quite a while. But having people with feet on the ground there is going to help.
All right. I just have to say, I'm over here like scratching, and the bed bug thing just apparently got in my head, and now I feel like there's bed bugs everywhere. Can you innovate something to like change psychosomatic behavior? Because I swear, now all of a sudden I'm like.
That's more of a pharmaceutical
yeah,
question.
That's whiskey.
Medicine.
Try whiskey.
Oh, whiskey. Good call. It is 5 o'clock somewhere, as we already mentioned. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm over here going like, I see bugs out of the corner of my eyes now. It's a huge problem.
No, and don't worry about bed bugs. They're too small to see. You wouldn't see them anywhere.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that'll comfort you, won't it?
Yeah.
No, thanks for that.
You'll never see them. Don't worry about that.
Until you get like welts or you get like little bug bites, right? And then you see those.
Apparently. Mm. If you have a mysterious bite, maybe it's a bed bug.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off Michigan.
No, really.
You got into cars and I got bored. What can I tell you?
I guarantee you the audience out there really doesn't hear much about bed bugs from the shows they listen to.
That's right. We're innovating. We're disrupting.
Absolutely.
Right here on this show.
Well, now, moving on from bed bugs, we can bookmark that, though, if you'd like to.
We'll do a whole show on it if you want.
You do product development, but you also help source manufacturing.
That's right. We do. One of the things we realized years ago is that there are a lot of companies out there that do design and engineering. You know, it's kind of, and most of them stay fairly small. And we realized that we had opportunities with clients to do other things. So we developed a manufacturing part of our business, in addition to the science R&D part, which are kind of two unique elements of what we do. But our manufacturing element helps us to really innovate a supply chain for our clients. We can do it domestically. Of course, we have feet on the ground here out mm-hmm. of Atlanta. We can help set up a supply chain domestically. But we also have feet on the ground in Hong Kong so that we can have our people close to the factories there to set up that supply chain as well. What we've learned is, in offshore factories, if you don't have people there, you kind of fall to the low end of the priority list because they know you're a plane flight away. And if something goes wrong, it's like, well, they'll take care of their local clients first, or the people that have offices in China, and then your stuff kind of gets, you know, eventually they'll get to it. However, my people, if there's a problem, and there's always a problem, product development, you know, it's about problems and solving them and getting through them. My people can be there the next day, and they'll stay there until the problem is solved. And at that point, all the factory wants to do is get rid of you.
Right.
So they put all their focus on getting rid of the quality guy so that they can get back to whatever they do when the quality guy's not there.
Well, we mentioned Kickstarter earlier in the show, and I like to cook, and I ordered there's a sous vide device mm-hmm. that you can clip on the side of a pot, and it's got an immersion. It's a neat thing. There's nothing else like it out in the market. but they've been keeping us updated on Kickstarter because now they're in the manufacturing phase.
Right.
And just what you're talking about, they've had to go over to Hong Kong and have run into problem after problem in pushing things through. So they've got to stay there until it gets done.
They should talk to us.
They should have.
You know, Kickstarter, I think there's clouds brewing there. Mm. I think there's some problems on the horizon with Kickstarter because, you know, a lot of people put up those Kickstarter projects and they put out, you know, if we'll charge $40 a piece of these. We sell 1,000 of them, we'll be in good shape. They don't do a lot of them, unfortunately, haven't done all the due diligence to realize, okay, if I'm only making 1,000, it's actually going to cost me $100 a piece to make them. So then they get down the road, they get all these people excited about the product, and then, you know, people are waiting at their mailbox for their product that never comes because these guys didn't work with a firm like us or someone else early on to figure out, okay, what's it really going to cost? And they go out and they make all these commitments, and then I'm a little worried about Kickstarter, frankly, and crowdfunding, but for this reason, because I think it's such an amazing opportunity to build new companies. I'm just worried it's going to get a black eye, and eventually people are going to kind of feel that, you know, they're getting taken advantage of because of some bad apples that either, I hate to say that, I'm sure there are people out there that intentionally do that just to take the money.
Sure.
But then also people that maybe got into it a little bit naively and didn't understand what they really needed to offer their product for in order to, you know, make their numbers.
Well, the idea of crowdsourcing funding, from my perspective, is really appealing because I know what's involved in non-crowdsourcing funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to go public, if you want to bootstrap, things along those lines, it's a really great way to get products, really good ideas, to the market very quickly. But you're right, mm-hmm. without the diligence and without the knowledge of everything that's involved,
I just hate to see that well get poisoned.
Is
where I'm coming from, because you're right. I have some ideas I'd love to put on there if I ever had time, but I'm too busy helping other people get their ideas to market.
Well, it is interesting because it does seem like it works well for more creative idea sort of projects. You know, we're going to make a movie, and what you're buying is not a widget. You're not buying a piece of equipment. You're buying, you know, your name, a credit in the film. And so, or a producer credit, or if you really spend a lot of money, you can have a walk-on role or something like that. So you're not overcommitting.
And I think for Kickstarter's original purpose was around arts projects and things like that. I think it's perfect for that.
Right.
However, the kernel of the idea there makes perfect sense for creating new product companies, too. Boutique product companies and things like that, it's going to be so easy for that to run off track. And those of us who care about it should try to find a way to fix it before that happens. Last thing we want to have happen is the government get involved and say, okay, we're going to regulate this thing.
Right.
And that would be problematic. So.
Well, it's almost like they need to have somebody like you that they can go to for advisory services just to say, am I pricing this right?
Right.
I can't put – like, I have this great idea, but like you said, if I promise 1,000 at $40 a piece, can I make that work?
Exactly. And that's one of the things we do for our clients is help them – work out their business viability early on. And, you know, for a few thousand dollars, I can help a startup company either kill the idea quickly, and it's better that they spend a few thousand dollars with me to kill the idea than to go out and spend $50,000 and then kill the idea, if that makes sense. Or I can help them realize, you know, there is a path forward, but maybe you need to change these things. You know, I understand you really want it to glow in the dark and levitate and this, that, and the other, but really all you're making is a house for a cat, you know, so let's focus on that. And
I want a levitating, glowing in the dark house for my cat.
Well, who wouldn't? But who's going to pay $800 for one?
My cat would never go in that thing.
I know, that's true. I'm kidding. Of course, I don't even have a cat, actually.
Well, going back to the idea of having a startup come to you with a question, is this viable, and charging them a couple thousand dollars? Do you ever have a situation in which you might take equity?
On occasion, we have to be careful about that because you start working for free, and then the work never stops.
Who hasn't been there?
Yeah, exactly. So we very rarely work totally for free because the minute we do that, then it's on the other end of the table. It becomes, well, can you just do this? Can you just do this? Can you just do this? And then that goes on for a year, and you all of a sudden your business is belly up, and nobody has a job anymore. So we sometimes work at a reduced rate and equity if we really believe in the idea, and if I don't already have several of those deals going. I mean, we can only do so many at a time.
Sure.
But, you know, our business may change long term. we may do more and more of that.
Right, right. And as far as your business goes, as I understand it, you do a little bit of everything at the business.
A lot of us do a little bit of everything. We are a small business. We're 30 people, but that's still, you know, that's still a small business. And a lot of us wear a lot of hats. And, you know, my time gets divided between marketing and working with the sales team, working with the engineering and production team, and events like this, and all sorts of things.
All right, very good. And four kids at home as well?
Nope, two and a half.
Two and a half.
Two, okay. Two and one on the way.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations.
I was going to say, what is a half child, and how do I get one?
Now, I've got to say, we've got a five-month-old at home, and it's our first child and our only child, according to my wife at this point, five months ago, having given birth.
You should still enjoy going out to dinner while you can.
Well, we're trying. We're trying. Yeah. We're working through that. But I've got to say, when I hear, you know, that you've got – both of you will ultimately have sort of the zone problem as opposed to the man-to-man problem. when I hear multiple kids, I just don't know. The idea of that is just overwhelming at this point with having gone through 5 months with the first child.
Right. Well, fortunately, they're not all the same age at the same time.
Right.
That's right.
So that helps.
Yeah.
Unless you have quadruplets or something.
Right. We're recruiting our 8-year-old to be on our team, actually.
Are you? Yeah. Okay. He's going to play defense.
So we're going to have 3-on-3 if we can get to it.
Very nice. Very nice.
I love that. We want to get contact information for both of you guys. So in case people want to reach either Engage or Slingshot, they can do so. So websites, gentlemen?
Sure. Well, Slingshot, we're located in Gwinnett County, and our website is slingshotpdg.com, and that's PDG as in Product Development Group. And pretty easy to find, pretty easy to get to. So give us a call, make an appointment. We'll be happy to meet with you.
Awesome.
Yeah, and probably the easiest way to reach me would be through my blog. I do that both on behalf of the company and myself, so it's just my name, Jeff Hillemire. It's HILIMIRE.com. Yep.
Okay. I like it. You're going to give out your personal phone number, too?
No, that'll come later.
Okay. You sure? Because I'm sure there's some people that want advice on how to handle four kids at one time. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I'd be looking for that advice as well.
I'm sure I could find someone for you. No worries. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for us.
It does. It does. It was another great show, Dana.
And same to you, sir. And we're going to be gone for the holidays, so we'll be back in 2 weeks.
We will. We'll have the best of. We'll be going back into the vaults of disruptive business.
We'll be disrupting the airwaves even when we're not here.
Absolutely.
That's right. So thanks again to our sponsor, Minerva Planning Group, the good folks who provide their clients with financial peace of mind. Check them out online at MinervaPlanningGroup.com. For Micah Porter and myself, have a happy holiday, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.